This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Welcome back to our Lifetime Income series, which runs week to week here on the program. And throughout the series, I am sure if you have been listening, and if you haven't been listening, shame on you, but that's okay. We discuss budgets and the concept of finding out what your number is. We're discovering, Jim, from feedback we're getting from listeners, people need help doing this because it sounds real easy when you first sit down to do it, but you would be surprised at the things that you need to take into consideration. And that's what we would like to do today, is to take you through a process of how you can arrive at what your number is in planning for retirement. And we have started through this process ourselves, Carol and I, using obviously the software that you have, and it begins to ask you all the questions that you need to know and think about. It does remind me a lot of filling out income tax forms, believe it or not.
Oh, come on. It's not that bad.
What it is every year I sit down and I start to get ready for income tax time, and I think, well, this will be simple. And 10 or 12 hours later, and 54 different words, which I can't repeat on the program, you're going, oh, geez, does it have to be so painful just to pay a tax? But fortunately, this is a lot easier.
What we usually do is we have some very sophisticated planning software that measures the success of your retirement. And what we do, John, is when you become a retirement planning client, we give you access to that software. So you're able to go in, take a look, and what this does, it leads you step by step through this process. And believe it or not, you know, people think, okay, you're going to start out right with the budget numbers. That's not the case. The most important thing that we try to get people focused on is we start out with goals. And obviously, you know, when you started out your working career, you might have had a career to start your own business, you know, rise or reach success working for somebody else. Whatever that goal is, start a family, you know, whatever those goals are, travel. We begin the retirement process with the same thing, and that is beginning with lifestyle goals. And one of the things that we know that when people retire, when they're not working, they have a lot more free time on their hands, and travel usually becomes an expanded portion of a budget. Now, we don't call it essential. We call it kind of like want to have. So the first thing that we do is we begin with lifetime goals during retirement. And at the top of the list is we start talking about expenses that you're going to run into retirement. One of them is going to be travel. Okay, how many trips do you plan on taking if you retire on an annual basis? What do you think you're going to be spending on those trips? I mean, most people, you know, if they're taking a trip or have gone on vacation before, they have a pretty good idea in terms of what it costs to go on the kind of trips they like to take. So we begin with the travel budget. How many trips? And then also we talk about a car, because we do know during your retirement career or lifetime, you're going to be driving a car. Maybe you don't need two cars like you did when both husband and wife worked, or maybe you're in a situation where with only one spouse working, so you might need two cars. We have to factor in a car, because sooner or later you're going to replace that car. So we first try to take a look at big capital expenditures. What are those big things that are going to surface in your retirement? Travel, a new car, maybe it's a major purchase. Let's say you have a hobby like myself, a sailboat, a fishing boat, an RV. And so we have you factor that in. What's the amount? What are you going to spend? And then something that we run that nobody pays a lot of attention to, John, is healthcare, because this is the one that comes to bite you in the middle of your retirement, especially as both husband and wife age later on, one spouse getting dementia, one spouse getting into a retirement home, or as the government asks you to pay more and more of your Medicare expenses. We know right now, for example, based on your income, your Medicare premiums could be $99 or they could be as high as $300 based on your income. So we take a look at health care. The other thing that we take a look at is your home. Are you going to stay in your present home? Are you going to downsize? Are you going to move to another state where the cost of living is cheaper? And so we get you to focus on that. Or are you going to change anything in your home? Maybe you're going to make some home improvements to make it easier to get around. You know, maybe you're living in a house that you've lived in for several decades. You need to update it. Also, the special kind of events that always crop up, your kids. Let's say you have children that are getting married. You have a daughter that you're going to have to pay for a wedding. What are the chances that your kids are going to get married? Anniversaries, special anniversaries, things like bat mitzvahs, bar mitzvahs, 50th wedding anniversary, 40th, 20th, whatever that is. And basically, it's what a business does, John. Just as a business has capital expenditures that they make, replacing equipment, building a new factory, these are the kind of things that we get you to focus on. And they're really goal-oriented, because what you don't want to do is, oh, I never factored in that I'd have to replace my car. Now that I have all this free time, you know, we didn't originally think we were going to take two trips a year or three trips a year. Or I haven't thought about how much it would cost for my daughter's wedding. So they're the equivalent of what I call a capital expenditure budget. These are things that are going to be major expenses that you're going to face during retirement as a result of having extra free time to travel, as a result of a hobby that could be involved, photography, sailing, bridge, golf, whatever that is, a motor home, special celebrations that are coming up, gifts, providing care for somebody. I have clients right now that are taking care of their parents because of the cost. And so all of a sudden, instead of the kids moving back, mom has moved back. And so these are things that you have to think of.
I think, Jim, healthcare is always the big unknown, because people have been, ever since starting with the baby boomers, systematically taking better care of themselves. So they're living to longer ages. They've managed to extend their longevity. But it's always a big unknown, because you don't know what you're plowing into later in your life and the things that will pop up. So that's always the big question mark, more than anything else, I think.
You know, it is, and it's amazing, because I got a big kick out of reading Richard Russell's newsletter last night. And one of the paragraphs, he goes, how did I get to be age 88? And I know why, because Richard has gotten rid of the stress in his life. He has gotten a good doctor. My current doctor I got through Richard Russell. We share the same doctor. And basically, it's funny, because he talks about why he got to be where he is. And he said, basically, you know, these people that live to be, you know, centurions, and I'm going to quote here, he said, of all these oldsters that had one thing in common, they were very resistant to the incidents that often kill ordinary people. Time and time again, oldsters survived and came back from accidents, diseases, potentially life-threatening mental stress periods, such as divorce, bankruptcy, or death of a loved one. In other words, what often kills a normal person fails to kill the centurions. Many times, I have felt that I was at death's door, and each time I survived. And if anybody knows anything about Richard Russell, he had two quadruple bypasses and four heart attacks, and at age 70, before he discovered the current doctor that we share, is he basically, you know, his doctor said, why don't you, before he got a new doctor, basically said, why don't you see your estate planning attorney? Because, you know, after two quadruple bypasses and, you know, four heart attacks, it wasn't looking pretty good. That was when Richard was age 70, and today he's age 88. And one of the things that he said is, through the grace of God, prayer, removing stress, you know what? He's 88 years old and is as vivacious and as clear thinking as he's ever been. It's great to have somebody like him with a lot of his wisdom. But you're right, John, people are living longer, and you have to work that in your retirement planning, whether you buy supplemental insurance to take care of what Medicare doesn't cover, whether you take and put together a long-term care policy. Obviously, the sooner and younger you do that, the less expensive it's going to be. However, if you get into your late 60s and 70s, there's a way to use annuities to take care of that, which is much cheaper.
All right. What about investments and retirement plans?
Well, I mean, that's where you put together a balance sheet and an income statement. And one of the first things that we want to look at are, what are the sources of predictable income you're going to have in retirement? In other words, do you have a company pension plan, a government pension plan, a teacher's pension plan? Do you have an annuity? What are your Social Security payments going to be? Because those are predictable. Those are things that we can factor into the equation, and we know. And because once you get to your number, the first thing that we're going to look at are, what are the sources of income that are going to be predictable? They're not going to change. We know that we're going to be able to count on these numbers. And the three sources, John, usually are Social Security, a company pension, or an annuity. Those are the three things that we can count on, that we know that we're going to be able to use as an income. And then what we want to look at is, what are your assets? How much is your house worth? What kind of investment assets do you have? Do you have like a 401k plan? Do you have personal investments? Those are the kind of things that we know that, given what your Social Security or pension or lack of pension is, what are the assets that we have to work with to help you make sure that you are not going to outlive your income needs?
The other issue that I think we need to face here is the type of investor you are, how that factors into your estate plan, because those two are directly related.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we do is we go through a risk score. How much risk are you willing to accept? Because obviously, if like in the very first case study that we talked about on this program, the case of Bill and Jan Smith, where Bill had taken his rollover 401k, rolled it over into an IRA 2006, invested into stocks, and lost, you know, basically $150,000. He was pretty market shy. So the risk factor that he was willing to assume was obviously a lot less had he not gone through the downturn that most investors experienced in 2007 and 2009. So we have to take a look at a risk score. Other things that we have to take a look at, are there any other sources of assets like stock options, deferred comp? We also want to look at insurance policies. Do you have life insurance benefits? Do you have long-term and care insurance that would factor into taking care of long-term needs? And then another important document that we like to go through are your estate planning documents. We talked about a case study last week with how you set up your retirement plan. If you have a large IRA, can determine whether the government is going to take 80% of it when the last spouse passes on. So we want to look at your will, your estate plan, your medical directives. Do you have powers of attorney, beneficiaries to your IRA, so that we know that your estate plan is in proper order? Because the last thing, believe me, that you want to do, folks, if you're married, is leave a surviving spouse with a mess on his or her hands. If something happens to you, and all of a sudden you're dealing with courts, you're dealing with attorneys, you're dealing with government, you're filing estate tax returns, income tax returns, changing beneficiaries, you know, a grieving spouse does not want to go through these kind of things. And more importantly, if you are a surviving spouse, you don't want to find yourself running into a long-term care facility, developing dementia, or, you know, just passing on with your estate plan in a complete mess with your children. So that's why taking a look at the estate planning documents is very important, so you don't leave any of these things open-ended that could end up coming back to bite either a surviving spouse or the heirs to your estate, ending up paying the government a lot more than you should have.
Having taken all of this into consideration, sources of income, what you anticipate your need outlay to be and what your wannabe outlay to be, you finally bring all this down to one thing, and that's a budget.
And what we try to do, John, is we set guidelines that can help you organize what your budget's going to be. Because a lot of people, what do I count? What do I don't count? You know, a lot of people, quite honestly, have never gone through this process before. So it is an organized budget that breaks things down into categories and makes you think about stuff that you don't normally think about. And there's two columns in this budget. In other words, okay, is this item essential for me? In other words, monthly country club dues, is that essential or is that in kind of want to have budget? So we have two categories. We have essential and we have want to have. And the real number that we're really trying to get at is, what is that number? What is the essential number? Because once you have that number, everything else becomes easy. It's real easy to take a look at your investment plan. It's very easy to take a look at alternative strategies, which it's whether it's going to be postponing retirement till your full retirement age for Social Security benefits, changing the investment strategy, or let's say changing expenses. Maybe you move, maybe you downsize. So there's various things, and this is the final number. But once you have this number, everything else falls in place, and it becomes a lot easier when looking at developing your retirement plan.
All right, so supposing that we go through this whole process, how do you stop that gnawing anxiety that you might have overlooked something that is going to be successful, the unknowns out there are going to get me no matter what I do, something along those lines?
Well, actually, our software, we use a Monte Carlo simulation, and it's going to tell you, and we have a way to illustrate this so the client can see it, even if they're long distance, through the computer program, it'll compute your probability of success. And what I like about this is, all right, you know, you want to be in the 80%, 80 to 90% plus category. That basically tells you that no matter what happens, you're not going to outlive your assets. But if you're not in that category, it makes suggestions. It says, all right, what happens if I postpone my retirement age? We can plug that right in front of your eyes, press a button, and you can see a little gauge, and it'll tell you what happens to your success rate. Or you can say, what happens if I cut my expenses? Let's say I downsize. We can modify the budget, press a button, and it tells you what your success rate. Or you can say, what if I do something different with my investment portfolio? But the most important thing, it's interactive. So it's the client making the decision, what if I do this? What are the results? Rather than, you know, somebody like myself saying, well, this is your plan, this is what we recommend. It's interactive. The client gets involved and participates and gets to see what the real-time results are if they make certain moves in their retirement, whether it's changing the budget, working part-time, postponing retirement, moving to another state, downsizing, changing the investment portfolio. But as we have shared over the last 6 months, John, there's all kinds of ways or tools that you can use to solve a problem. But more importantly, you're going to know what your probability is of success. And more importantly, you're going to know what your number is.
You're listening to the Financial Sense NewsHour at financialsense.com.
Don't forget my number.
In the first part of Lifetime Income, we discussed arriving at your number, the amount of money you need to have coming in to make sure everything keeps flowing through your retirement years. When you put together an investment strategy, how much of that strategy, Jim, is dictated by that number?
Well, I mean, that's the bulk of the retirement plan, because once we know what the essential number is, John, what the client really wants and what gives them peace of mind is saying, okay, this is the number I need to have coming in on a monthly basis to live the lifestyle that I want to live in retirement. And it's not just that what that number is today, it's what that number is going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So the first thing that we look at are, what are the things that we can find that are guaranteed predictable in arriving at that number? So obviously we start with, I don't know, let's just, for simplicity's sake, let's just say the number is $5,000 a month, for example. So you're spending $60,000 a year. Well, the first thing we're going to look at is Social Security. What is your Social Security? What is your wife's Social Security? What are those two numbers combined? So then we're going to subtract that from the $5,000 number, and let's just say that Social Security is $2,000 a month. So we know that we can count on $2,000 a month coming in from Social Security, and that number is indexed to an inflation rate, although that inflation rate tends to be on the low side. So we subtracted $2,000, then we have a shortfall of $3,000. So then we take a look at, okay, what other sources of predictable income can we count on coming in? Obviously, if between the two spouses, if one spouse has a pension coming in from the employer, then we take that number into account. So let's say that, I don't know, between the two spouses, that they have a pension income coming in of, let's say, I don't know, $1,000, $2,000 a month. So now we have $2,000 that we know that's going to come in every single month, $2,000 from a pension, $2,000 from Social Security. So now we know we have $1,000 of a shortfall that we have to make up. Now, one of the things that we try to do, John, is we try to take that budget and we use an inflation rate that the client agrees upon, because, you know, sometimes they'll ask us, sometimes we'll use historical norms, or the client will say, boy, where I live, my expenses have been going up by X amount of dollars. So then what we're going to do is we're going to take that budget, essential budget, and say, all right, here's what you're spending day one. Here's what that number is going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, because we try to tell the client, look, you may be okay today, but I can tell you this, and I, you know, most clients, you know, this isn't very difficult to explain because they've experienced an increase in their living cost over their lifetime. So then we take the 5-year number, the 10-year number, and so then we take a look at, okay, what's the shortfall in year one? What's the shortfall going to be in year 5, year 10, year 15, year 20? And then what we do is we take a look at then what other assets do we have to work with that can bring in that number to make sure that the client knows that that number to meet their essential goals is always going to be there. And there's a number of things that we can do. And there's two vehicles we primarily use to achieve that number. One, we can use an annuity that comes in because that's guaranteed. So once the client knows that the annuity number, it's almost like a pension, that's coming in, they know what that number is going to be. Or if they have a large enough sufficient assets, we can put together a laddered bond portfolio. I don't use bond funds because bond funds, they're not predictable. But then what we do is we can put together a laddered bond portfolio so the client knows that every month, this amount of interest is going to be coming in off their bond portfolio, whether it's taxable or tax-free. And so, John, those are the main things that we use to get at that essential number. Social Security, company pension plans, annuities, and a bond portfolio, because between those four, we know that that number is predictable. It's not going to change if the stock market goes up or down. It's not going to change if we go off the fiscal cliff. It's not going to change if, I don't know, Greece defaults on their debt. And that's what we do to solve the essential problem of what that essential number is.
Well, you know, but life isn't static, Jim. And so you've got this plan. Now, are you going to be rigidly locked into this thing, or are there, like, you know, you have future want-to-haves, there are healthcare issues that came in, I can think of all sorts of things that might crop up that you go, well, we need a midstream adjustment. How do those factor in?
Well, once we've got the essential budget covered, whether it's covered from pensions, Social Security, annuities, or a bond portfolio. Then we'd take a look at healthcare. If they're young enough and they don't have enough income to cover that down the road, it might involve getting a long-term care policy. Two, if they're later on, let's say in their mid, late 60s, we might use an annuity plan. And then also for future inflation cost, we use something like dividend income. And usually once you reassure a client that their essential living expenses are going to be met with as close as you can get to a guaranteed or predictable income stream, then usually, John, they're more open to, let's say, something like dividend income, you know, blue chip. There's not too many people that lose a lot of sleep over owning Walmart, Exxon, or a Johnson & Johnson, and especially when you show them the history of, you know, a lot of these companies have been increasing and paying dividends. I mean, we own a water utility that has been paying dividends for almost, 90 years now, never missed a dividend payment. So then we can factor in an additional side of the investment portfolio that's going to handle future inflation needs, whether we do that for long-term care using an annuity, whether we do that with dividend-paying stocks, but it's usually a combination. But it's almost a different way of looking at an investment portfolio. In other words, each component of the investment portfolio is meeting a specific objective, and that's a much different way of looking at your investment portfolio rather than putting everything in one pot and say, this is it. This is my portfolio, and expect that to handle all the needs. And once people understand, like, for example, that, you know, dividend income is there for inflation, it's going to be there. If the stock market goes down, the dividends aren't going to go down. More likely, as we see most of the time, the dividends are increasing. In fact, we had that case with Bill and Jan Smith with the stock market correction in May, and it just so happened that month two of the companies increased their dividends. So the dividends never changed, and they've been going up. And fortunately, with all these windfalls like Walmart and Costco, our dividend clients are getting a windfall this month with companies accelerating their dividend payments.
Okay, to sum all of this up, once you know the essential number, then you can assemble a portfolio taking into account your Social Security, pensions, other investment income that reassures the person that the income will indeed be there. You can use planning software, which gives them a probability of success, taking into account a lot of factors. And then even for the wannabes or the extras that come in, you can actually structure a portfolio where the income stream meets that, and people can be reassured that even if the country goes off a cliff, they'll still be intact as far as their planning goes. But that's why you have a plan, because the plan at least provides you with a strategy, and then you can make adjustments to that based on real life situations. And if our listeners would like to contact you regarding just such a plan, how might they do so?
888-486-3939. Ask for Kathleen or myself, and we'd be glad to sit down and talk to you about putting together your own personal retirement plan.
Next week is the last regular show of the year, and as we always do at year end, we will be putting together special programs for the last couple of weekends of the year.
John, that's assuming we make it past the Mayan calendar. This could be our last show next week.
Now, wait a minute. See, now, you know, you've been telling us all about Obamanomics during this show. And you have to realize is that if the whole thing blows apart because of the Mayan calendar, say we have a magnetic polar reversal here on the Earth, and the poles reverse and all the chaos cuts loose, who cares about Obamanomics? We're going to have worse things than that to worry about, Jim.
I know. I've been watching it all week on the History Channel. If you're tuned into the History Channel, I've seen Nostradamus, the new Nostradamus, the old Nostradamus, the Mayan calendar. Oh, my goodness. I mean, what a way to go to bed at night. I mean, you just turn it on and there it is, right in your face.
But if you can't sleep, flip on the History Channel. Meanwhile, George Washington in 1771. you're out.
Yeah, I know.
Well, the real thing, though, is, you know, as you've mentioned and as I've observed, too, every single year, we go through this little drama at the end of the year. And it's almost like this terrible tension. And they came out with a deal. And right after the elections, boy, Boehner popped out, Obama popped out. And it was like they were reading off the same script, different parts, same script. And I went, oh, look at that. This is another drama. It's being cooked up for our benefit. The real question is, what will come out of that Kabuki theater, and then how much of it will be shoved into next year? Will the new Congress try to do anything about it, or will we just slide down with it, and are we just kicking the can down the road? That's, I think, the whole projection.
Yeah, you know, the media is acting like, wow, the fiscal cliff, this is something new. We've never faced it. You know, we've faced this 3 out of 4 of Obama's first term of office. We're at a fiscal cliff in 2010 with the Bush tax expiring. They kicked the can down the road. We lowered taxes on payroll withholding. 2011, same thing. We kicked it over into 2013. And voila, John, here we are, December 2012. And we're at a fiscal cliff, and I suspect next year we'll have another one as well. But the real important one is the entitlement cliff, and that's what we're going to start seeing kicking in between 2014 and 2016, because every day of the week, 10,000 boomers head into retirement. That's the real number and the real issue that we need to be focusing on, which they are not doing. In the meantime,
let me ask you a question before you do that, Jim. Do you really think we can ever deal with the level of debt that we have? We'll call it $16 trillion, plus about $80 trillion of unfunded liabilities. Is there any realistic way, or is a lot of that just going to have to blow off and go away?
No, there is. I mean, Simpson Bowles and Paul Ryan. I mean, when Social Security was put into place, what was it, 1933, John, or 1936, I forget which year, the average life expectancy for male is 63 to 65. I mean, I was reading Richard Russell's newsletter last night. He was part of that Social Security generation. Richard is 88, so people are living longer. So we do know that we could get rid of a lot of these problems by making some simple adjustments because of the fact that people are living longer. So you move the retirement age to minimum benefits at 65, full benefits at age 69 to reflect that people are living into their late 70s and 80s. We have more centurions. You do the same thing with Medicare. Those that make more money pay more, which they started in 2010. You know, if you make a certain level of income, you could pay $300 a month versus $99. There's ways that they can solve this, but they don't want to do it. They do not want to cut spending because they've never had to. As the world's reserve currency, if they couldn't borrow it, they could simply get the Fed to print it. And remember, that's the way they get elected. They buy votes by promising free lunch money. And that's how the president got reelected. The problem is we are going to run up against a wall. At some point, we're going to run out of free lunch money. Not for a while, but eventually we'll get there. Well, speaking of getting there, we've run out of time for this week's show. I'd like to thank you on behalf of John Loeffler and myself for joining us here on this week's program. Until you and I speak again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
A night's a light, the Hanukkah menorah. A light's to burn on and on. But I still wake up, wanna hear your voice. Oh Lord, I'm still not sure what I stand for.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.
This segment of the Financial Sense News Hour is brought to you by Nationwide Financial. For more information about Nationwide's products and services, please visit nationwide.com. That's nationwide.com. Neither Nationwide nor any of its affiliates is related to or affiliated with Jim Poplava of Poplava Securities, Incorporated.